From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Every gardener has his or her own tomato secrets, tips, and tricks they're sure will bring earliest fruit or the biggest harvest. Some of us swear by staking, others by caging, some let their plants sprawl. And then there's to feed or not to feed. And what about preventing tomato troubles like blossom end rot or hornworm damage or yellowing leaves? And last week I wrote a tomato growing story as part of a garden series I've been doing in the New York Times. And this week I wanted to continue the tomato theme and talk about them with Mr. Tomato himself, Craig LaHoulier, a.k.a. NC Tomato Man, and author of the classic book Epic Tomatoes. More in a minute, but first these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
Craig LaHoulier has gardened and grown tomatoes in areas of the U.S. as different as New England and Seattle, Pennsylvania, and Raleigh, North Carolina, and lately in the mountains of Western North Carolina, too. He's one of the founders of the Dwarf Tomato Project that we've talked about on the show before, and generally just an all-tomato, all-the-time kind of guy. And I'm so happy he's here to talk about you-know-what. Hey, Craig, how are you?
You're happy. Imagine my joy in getting a chance to do this with you, Margaret.
Thank you
so much, and I hope you're well. It's all beautiful in Hendersonville today. How is it there?
Yeah, we're turning the corner. It's no longer winter as of yesterday. Oh my goodness, my goodness. Mid-May and we're maybe out of winter.
Yeah, I just finished watering and I noticed that there was a coleus we had planted that I forgot that I had planted, and it really did not appreciate getting down to about 33 degrees. So it's in the hospital, which is my garage, seeing if it will live.
I have a hospital too. So before we begin, I wanted to say, well, let's have a book giveaway of the Epic Tomatoes book, which is so wonderful. With the transcript of the show, people can enter to win it. So we'll do that over on awaytogarden.com for a little extra tomato fun. And because anyone who doesn't have it, it's such a good read and it's so helpful, both things. So you've recently moved to a whole new zone. From what zone to what zone? How does that work in North Carolina?
Yeah, well, Raleigh, when we moved in 28 years ago, it was definitely in the sevens, and we'd average maybe 5 to 10 days of 90 or above in the summertime. And 28 years later, it's a zone 8, and we had 70 days of 90 or above last year, including at least a half a dozen heat waves, 4 days in a row at 90 to 95 or more. So we are now in a 7A, and we'll have maybe 5 or 6 days at 90 and above. So mm-hmm. I'm so happy that we're going to be cooler.
And you're also, like a lot of people this year, though, you're sort of exploring new territory, literally you are, but I mean, a lot of people, there's been this enormous, I mean, I was talking again for that story in the Times, I talked to Tom Stearns of High Mowing Organic Seeds, and he was saying they had a 300% increase in home gardener sales this year, and some weeks they were up as much as 5 times normal, week to week, you know? And so many new people gardening, garden centers are having bumper business, even though with the restrictions and so forth on shopping. And so, you know, you're a little bit of a new gardener, too, because you're in a new place.
No, you're absolutely right. And the perfect timing of our move at a time where, you know, there are some really real challenges and difficulties with COVID. However, I get to go through and share an experience of what it's like to garden in a new zone, in a new area, when confronted with new space and new decisions to make. So, all of us, you and I are both, and there's many of us, educators and garden coaches and people who are trying to inspire new gardeners to stay gardeners forever. So I'm hoping that opportunity allows me to share what I'm doing, both the things that succeed, the things that go wrong. I'll be very open about all of it. And then learn what I can about gardening in Hendersonville in my particular yard this year, and we'll make some adjustments next year. Yeah. So I am, you know, I've been gardening 40 years, and to be able to still be as excited about gardening 40 years into a hobby is just, to me, it makes it a very unique hobby, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And we'll also give people the heads up that you've been doing these really fun, which I've been coming to, Instagram Lives on Fridays and sometimes at other times, Friday afternoons. And you're at NC Tomato Man on Instagram. And you people can, like, ask you questions, and you show us how you're doing things and what stage the plants are at. And, I mean, they can just chime in and say, what do I do about this? How do I stake that? What? So let's talk about some of the things. I mean, I think in Raleigh you grew in straw bales and in grow bags that were set on the surface of your very famous driveway. Your driveway garden.
The driveway, right? Driveway of all driveways, right?
Yes. And where are you growing your tomatoes and other things now? Are you growing in bags and bales, or are you growing in the ground? What are you doing now?
So we have about a quarter of an acre backyard that is quite sunny, and but we have our septic field back there. So one of the things I did not rush into is getting a shovel and digging up the soil. I've learned a lot about container gardening and straw bale gardening, but we'll focus mostly on container gardening. And we'll definitely go in. I gardened for years and years and years in a traditional garden, and so you never really forget about that experience. But it's a work in progress, because I've got, 29 plants planted, but another 70 or 80 that need to get in there. And they will probably go into 10-gallon containers, grow bags, you know, maybe some 5-gallon containers. So you're catching me where it's a work in progress, and I'm figuring it out day by day as I go along.
Mm-hmm. What's the worst thing you ever did to a tomato? What was the worst flop?
maybe the worst thing that I ever did to a tomato, and it still rewarded me, is we do seedling sales in the spring, and all gardeners have pots of things that either don't sell, don't get given away, get forgotten, and they just sit there. So I had some sun golds that were at least 2 months past sales time. They were a foot and a half tall of just a stem with maybe a few leaves coming off it, and they didn't look very good. So I'd find those, and I'm thinking, oh, I've got space for another sun gold, and I just bury it as deep as I can, and it leafs out, and it produces delicious sun gold. So I guess the moral of the story is tomatoes are tough. Gardeners, I think, in general, especially new gardeners, really don't want to make mistakes, and we tend to maybe overcare for and baby our plants. And I've learned through the years that tomatoes really do respond well to some tough love along the way. There's very few things that actually will kill them and make them disappear. Some of those things have teeth. And, but yeah, they're very forgiving. And, you know, we'll probably talk through some tips in this, in this chat we have about what do you do? What are the things to do to help build in quality from the front? And what are the things you do over the course of a season to ward off really sad stories and just put a smile on your face at the end of the season, because you've succeeded. You've got what you want. You've got delicious tomatoes and on the table, in jars, in the freezer, you know?
So you just talked about that stretched out, spindly, overgrown, overdue transplant of the sun gold, and how you stuck it in a really deep hole. So up north, we haven't planted because it's been like snowing and stuff. And even in a lot of other places, people quite a bit to the south, you know, halfway between you and Miramar, people have had some frosts, you know, recently. Yeah. It's been really nutty. So not to worry if you haven't planted yet, folks. I have a friend who, even here up north, 1 year he was so busy with work assignments, he didn't plant his tomatoes till July 4th weekend, and he had the best crop he ever had. But one of the things with an overgrown plant or spindly plant, like you said, is plant it really deep, because they can make those adventitious roots off the stem, right? They're a plant that can do that. So they can really root in super deep. You know, you're not suffocating it, right?
Absolutely. And I actually also plant eggplant, peppers deeply. I'm a, as a few friends have called me, I tend to be a bit of a rule breaker. And yes, I read books and I read blogs. But then I kind of put my thinking cap on and I think, why can't I try this? And it helps. Yeah. It's helped me to develop some new variations on techniques through the year and, you know, succeed more often than not.
So we're gonna plant deep. I plant even a normal 6-inch kind of a seedling, a stout small seedling that's maybe 6 weeks or so growing. Mm-hmm. You know, that I might have grown myself. I plant them deep. Do you take off the lower leaves? Do you create a splash like barrier to get prevent fungal spores from the soil from getting up onto that plant? Like, what's your sort of how do I put it in the ground, and what am I thinking about when I'm transplanting?
So great question. And it's a really wonderful thing for beginners to consider as well, because you may be looking at a garden area that's been gardened a long time. You may be looking at something that you're just digging for the first time yourself. You may have a container. I think it's really good right from the start to understand what kind of soil you've got. So does it drain? If you dig a hole and it rains, is that rain still there the next day? Or do you dig a hole and it rains and the water's gone in 5 seconds? That tells you if you're too sandy, it drains too quickly, you're not retaining water, so those roots are always going to be searching. Or if you've just got so much of a barrier to drainage that your roots are literally going to drown. The plant's going to look like it's dry because it's wilting, but it's actually drowning because it's not getting oxygen. So working organic matter into your soil, and maybe sending a sample off to an extension service just to get an idea if your three main nutrients, NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, are in good balance. At that point on, you just dig a nice deep hole, like you said.
Yeah.
Bury as much as the stem as you can, or if you can't dig deep, you can dig diagonal and kind of bend the plant in, bury that stem. Because of phototropism, the plant will grow upright. It may stick out of the ground bent, but it will go right up toward the sun, won't it?
It's almost like a trench, and the two-thirds of the stem is below. The root ball is at one end, say at the left, and then the most of the stem's in the trench. And then you sort of bend the upper part and the upper couple sets of leaves up, and then you fill in that trench, and your tomato will, again, you say, it will grow up vertically, not sideways.
I've had issues with my garden in Raleigh where some areas didn't drain well at all, and I actually brought soil on either side of the row that I wanted to plant till it was about a foot tall, and I planted the tomatoes deeply in that top part of the soil that I moved in. That meant the roots weren't getting near the zone where the water was collecting, and the plants did absolutely great. And any of the excess drained out the side. Now, you mentioned something critically important. Eventually, maybe right from the start, but certainly eventually, garden soil will pick up all kinds of disease spores. Many are fungal in nature. Some are bacterial, some are viral. So I actually do mulch a plant right from the start. Once it's planted right around the stem end, I would actually put a cutworm collar around the plant, because you don't want the little cutworm to sidle up to your plant, encircle it, and then chew the plant off at the soil line. So just, paper cup, the lid of a paper cup or the top of a paper cup, a couple of inches out from the stem, just to encircle your stem to prevent that barrier from the cutworm getting to it, but then mulch it. And I like to use a water and aerosolable mulch that will allow water to absorb through, such as untreated grass clippings, shredded leaves, shredded bark. You could use landscape fabric or plastic as long as slits are cut in and you have an area for the water to reach. That will help that's one of those things about building quality in the front. So those spores are not splashing up on the leaves and you're within a few weeks, you're starting to see the effects of early blight or septoria already hitting your lower leaves.
Right.
Mulching will prevent that. Yep.
And so people know in a lot of areas of the country, the Northeast, parts of the Midwest, et cetera, these diseases live in the soil. These are living organisms. Mm-hmm. They reside in the soil community. So you can't get rid of some of these diseases that you just mentioned. Some of them are present in your environment. So you have to manage around them, prevent them, do your best. Right. And so this barrier.
And the good news is things like early blight and septoria really don't kill a plant, as long as, and this is part of your during season maintenance that we'll talk about in a moment, don't let those spores infect so much of your foliage that the foliage itself then controls spores. It's on a calm night, they're just going to float around your garden and stick to the foliage of your neighboring plant. So it's funny. I have kind of a mental checklist each day of what I do in the garden, and I'm actually going to talk about it tomorrow on my Instagram Live. I'm going to show a picture of my checklist and take people through it. But the first thing I have is walk the garden. Yep. Look at the plants. Familiarize yourself with them. What do they look like when they're happy? What do they look like when they need something? And then you can react to it immediately. And to me, it makes gardening more than just something you do for an hour a week. It's that fulfilling journey that you're on that lasts you the whole season, and you get to know your plants. And I think, you know, more frequently observed and understood and cared for plants do better in the long run by the end of the season.
Right. So we've put our baby in a deep hole, lying down or straight up. Uh-huh. We've put a barrier, depending on where we live. A lot of us northerners like to use those black materials, which, by the way, I know people don't want to use plastic, and I totally understand that. Yep. I have plastic that I've used because I got the really, really thick stuff, these sheets that fit over one of my beds.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've used it for 10 years. And landscape fabric, the same thing is don't throw it away. You roll it up and use it next year, right? So we're not encouraging being wasteful of fossil fuel products. So
I'm still using the plastic 10-gallon pots that I've had for 28 years.
Yes.
Like, they're great. They last literally forever.
Yes.
And a lot of times I've found them rolling around on highway medians. You know, shrubs come them. So you just go and collect them, and you're cleaning up the environment, and you're bringing home and you're putting plants on them, and it's all good. One thing I probably should have mentioned is you're going to learn something about your soil, and you can amend it. And it's interesting that if it drains too fast or if it drains too slow, the answer seems to always be organic materials, leaf mold, worm castings, or kitchen scraps that you've composted. Anything that helps the structure of that soil naturally builds in the nutritional elements and helps the drainage, helps to either retain moisture nicely or drain well. You can't go wrong with working organic matter into your planting hole for your tomato plant.
So we have the baby in the ground, and do you stake, cage, trellis, or nothing? What are you doing? I know, again, maybe give us the guidelines for either in big containers or in the ground, not for the straw bale so much because that has its own architecture.
Right. Yeah. So we've got the plant in the ground. You need to water it in because often you've got a plant that it may not have been hardened off as well, particularly if you get it from someone that you haven't grown it yourself and you don't know the hardening off process. Water it in. I don't feed my plants for a couple of weeks, so they have everything they need just through their own photosynthesis and the sun and the water that you give it and what's in the ground. So I don't feed right away. I actually have the strategy of what I use to support my plant definitely depends on the type of plant it is, meaning there are three general types of tomatoes. Indeterminates are the ones, the unruly stepchildren. They grow up, they grow out, they sucker, they drive people crazy. They're also 95% of the tomatoes we know of, and they also are the Cherokee purples and the Sun Golds and the Brandywines and the ones that make you drool when you think about them.
Yep.
So there is a strategy for indeterminate varieties. The dwarfs and determinants, and when you think determinant, think Roma, something that grows about 3 or 4 feet tall. It's a tomato factory for about 2 weeks, and then you can say goodbye to it.
Right.
Dwarfs behave like indeterminants, only they grow half at the rate. So if you've got an 8-foot Cherokee, 8-foot tall Cherokee purple at the end of the year, your dwarf will be a nice, tidy 4 feet. Determinants in dwarfs should not be pruned, and they actually are perfect candidates for what I like to call the useless tomato cage. the metal cones that, you know, people who are just starting off will buy them, put them over their tomato. It's an indeterminate tomato. Within 2 weeks, it's still June, and they wonder what's going to happen for the rest of the year as the tomato is just pouring out the top of this thing.
Yeah.
Determinants and dwarfs will stay right in there. I am a staker. The reason is down south we have so many diseases and critters down low that if I were to allow my plants to sprawl, hungry critters would come take bites, slugs would get to them, diseases would hit that foliage. You can let plants sprawl if you put a nice thick layer of some sort of a mulch, like a straw down, and if you've got the room to let them do it. Because an indeterminate will take up, 5 square feet or more? I mean, it will be massive.
So for the like the other thing that you and I don't do is trellising, and I'm going to refer people over from the transcript, and they can see the trellising from the story that I did with Tom Stearns at High Mowing. But the staking, do you then prune, because I want to get on to some of the next steps, do you prune the, you tie it up every foot, or what's the, what happens?
So I'll use the 8-foot metal core plastic coated stakes that you could buy at the big box stores, hammered in near the base of the plant, and then so the difference in pruning strategy is that there is an ideal. I would like to think that I'm really disciplined at pruning and at topping, and the reality, which is gardeners have a tough time removing living tissue that's growing well and looking happy. So let's do ideal. Craig would probably let 2 or 3 suckers develop. So let's say by 2 or 3 feet off the ground, your tomato plant has 4 main stems, and then you're suckering all 4 of those stems as they grow upward. And then I tie that, make a topiary out of it. I use sisal twine, and I make a tie about every foot or so. And so the plant will be about maybe 1.5 feet wide. This allows you to plant your indeterminates maybe within 2 feet apart. And for me, who's a real variety nerd, I want to grow as many different things each year. So I tend to plant my plants a little closer than is recommended. But what I use is leaf removal, foliage removal, pruning, tying to keep the plants a little bit separate from each other as they grow up. And it's hard to do that. And then if they get to, once they get to the top of the that 8-foot stake, ideal, Craig would say, this is enough. If I let these grow further, they're going to get too heavy. The fruit that's going to form on that extra that's hanging over may not ripen anyway, so I'm just going to remove it. And I usually don't do it because I hate to remove living tissue at the end of the year. So I'm going to be better. My New Year's resolution as a gardener is going to be I'm going to top my plants when they get to the top of my stake.
Okay. So that we don't run out of time, we have 3-4 minutes left, I want to just sort of race ahead to the – so we're tying this up when you say taking out the suckers between a main stem and the side branches. Sometimes there's in the crotch there's a third little piece that happens, and that's a sucker, right?
Yep, you've got up and down, and then you've got roughly 90 degrees where the leaf comes out, and at 45 degrees, out comes the sucker. And every joint between the leaves and the main stem, so you really need to be on top of it.
Okay, and so then you said earlier, so here we have the plant in the ground, we're supporting it along the way, we've planted it deep. You said earlier, real quick, about the you don't feed right away. You do feed at some point down the road?
At about 2 weeks in, I will start using a fertilizer of choice. And this is where what people use to feed their plants with, they'll need to let that fit into their own personal gardening philosophy, and the two major categories being conventional and organic.
Yeah.
So, so I am not yet strictly organic. I'm kind of slowly moving in that direction, but I will use an all-purpose 10-10-10 granular and sprinkle that around the base of the plant. Maybe about 6 inches from the stem, but in a ring, and work that in. And I'll do that every 2 or 3 weeks. If I'm in a container, sometimes I'll just use one of the water-soluble all-purpose, mix it up a tablespoon per gallon, and I'll give each of my plants 1.5 cups or so each week. Now, the rationale between frequent feeding and watering in a container is the roots in a container are limited in what they can get to. The nutrients in the water are within the bounds of that container, unlike garden-grown plants that they can reach down and deep and get nutrients
and
water.
Yeah, they can go like 4 feet away from the plant.
Yeah.
Right.
So daily, I do daily watering of my containers. And don't forget, we're pretty hot down here. And but I let the plants tell me. Blossom end rot. The entry level method into blossom end rot is withholding water from your tomato plants and stressing them out in the heat of the summer to the point where they start visibly wilting in the middle of the afternoon when they're developing little small fruit. So the plant is doing so much work. It wants food. It wants water. You take a few days and go on a trip. You forget to tell your neighbors to water. The plant wilts. It doesn't die, but that stress induces a calcium transport issue, and that will lead to the beginnings of blossom end rot. You come home, you water the plant recovers, you're like, good, I've saved the plant. Uh-oh, my tomatoes have blossom end rot on them.
Right, right.
So drip irrigation, regular watering and making it's that thing of walking through the garden. My plant's happy. It's never really wilting. You will not ever see an incidence of blossom end rot. As long as you're in good quality soil where all of the micronutrients are balanced and there's sufficient calcium for the plant to use, unless you stress it. And if you stress it, the plant will tell you that.
Yeah. Well, guess what? We've used up all our time, and I haven't even asked you if you have any hornworms.
My gosh.
I know, it's terrible. But as I said, we have two really great conversations that we've had before that we'll include with the transcript, which are about some of your other tomato adventures, plus this New York Times piece that I just did from the fully organic perspective, but also with some other ideas. So there'll be lots and lots of tomato info with the transcript. And plus, Instagram Live on Fridays, we can send people over to @NCTomatoMan. Thank you, Craig. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
This was absolutely wonderful. One quickie, whoever gets the book, if they email me, I will be happy to sign a plate that they can stick into that book
that Story Publishing
gives me, and then I can mail that to them with a few packets of seeds that are really special, and that will make it a little bit of a, you know, maybe a special thing for whoever wins the book.
Thank you, thank you. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Bye, Margaret. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com. And happy tomato growing meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.